This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 30th of August 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 30th of August, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Now let's introduce your readers today. It's Nicky Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now don't be too surprised if you receive a green memory stick instead of red in the future. We've been gradually changing over from red to green because we've nearly run out of red sticks, so the recording should still be the same, and the same quality, the same method of using them. We've just changed colour. Now, this week's announcements, we start with What's On, and at the Theatre Royal from the 12th to the 14th of September at 8 p.m. excuse me, with a matinee on Saturday, Calendar Girls is being performed by the West Meon Theatre Group. For more information on the Theatre Royal, telephone 01962 840 440. At Romsey Abbey on Saturday the 7th of September at 7:30 p.m, the Royal Marines Association Band is performing. And for details on that, telephone 01794 512 987. At Winchester Cathedral, there is a Tuesday lunchtime concert on the 3rd of September at 1 p.m. and that's being performed by the Royal College of Music. It's free with a retiring collection. And the following week at Romsey Abbey on Wednesday the 11th of September at 1 p.m. there's also a lunchtime concert, and that again is free with a retiring collection. At the Mayflower Southampton from Thursday the 5th to Saturday the 14th of September, Fiddler on the Roof is playing at 7:30 p.m. That's at the Mayflower, Thursday the 5th to Saturday the 14th. There's a matinee on Thursday and Saturday. And for more information on the Fiddler on the Roof at Mayflower, telephone 02380 711 811. That's 02380 711 811. And finally, at the Salisbury Playhouse, The Three Musketeers is being performed from Tuesday the 10th of September to Thursday the 12th. That's at 7:45 with a matinee on Thursday the 12th. The Three Musketeers at Salisbury Playhouse. For more information, telephone 01722 320 333. That's 01722 320 333. The lighting up time ends today, Friday the 30th of August, at 6:16 a.m. and begins at 7:56 p.m. And on Wednesday the 4th of September, it ends at 6:24 a.m. and begins at 7:45 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826, and there's a card inside your wallet with Lynn's details on there should you need to phone her. Now, the main headlines this week: homes evacuated as building site burns, safety expert killed in helicopter crash, and district is facing housing shortage. So Nicky, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is homes evacuated as building site burns. Neighbours were forced to flee their homes in the middle of the night as a wall of fire engulfed a building site in their Winchester street. 10 families were evacuated as a devastating fire ripped through a soon-to-be-completed two-storey housing complex in Hatherley Road, full flood. 40 firefighters battled the blaze, which started just before 4:30 a.m. last Thursday morning. Crews from across Hampshire managed to contain the fire, but a partial collapse at the front of the building forced the evacuation of neighbouring properties. Next-door neighbour Martin Howell and wife Susan were evacuated from their home while firefighters tackled the blaze. He said, "The heat was very intense. We had two cars in the drive, which I managed to get out of the way because they both had full tanks of petrol. I was very worried because the heat was unbelievable and I have never been that close to a house fire before. I don't want to see anything like that again. The 53-year-old company director added, "Everything was left in the house and it all flashes through your mind. The first thought was, am I going to get to work tomorrow? But after that, you realise just how lucky you are." His house suffered heat damage to the windows and paintwork, but a nearby lamppost melted in the intense heat. John Rees-Evans lives opposite the site and was woken by loud bangs on his door. Mr. Rees-Evans, 65, said, "My wife Beverly and I were fast asleep when we heard bangs on our front door and people shouting, 'Get out!' We rushed out and we could see through the window there was a wall of fire. We thought at first it was our home. It was like a volcanic eruption with the amount of debris everywhere." The building, owned by Winchester-based developers Millgate, was 8 weeks from completion and would have been a five-bedroom house and three two-bedroom apartments. Millgate director Rob Carter said he was devastated but heaped praise on firefighters and residents. "I was on holiday when I got the call from Hampshire Constabulary. It's one of those calls you never want to get. Disbelief, just complete disbelief. I was in France but saw the pictures on the Hampshire Chronicle website. I just couldn't believe it. The site will have to be completely cleared to the foundations now and we will start from scratch. I just don't know how the fire crews managed to contain the fire and stop it spreading. I'm also sorry that residents, who have already been so understanding about the work, will have to go through it all again. The case is being investigated by Detective Constable Rich Jones and police are reviewing the CCTV footage taken from a fire engine at the scene, although DC Jones declined to comment further. According to Incident Commander Mark Budden, the roof collapsed quite quickly and the intensity of the blaze caused damage to cars parked nearby. Speaking from the scene, Commander Budden said, "We're very proud of what the teams did today. Because of the instability of the building, we could not go inside, so we had to fight it defensively from the outside." Several residents also praised the action of firefighters and for keeping the situation calm. Commander Budden added investigations into the cause were continuing, but arson had been ruled out. And there's some really astonishing photographs of, looks like the bombing of London. I mean, flaming buildings, very striking. And one of all the, what are called fire engines lined up, pouring water and crowds of people silhouetted in the dark against the fire light. And the next, the day after scene of this building, completely devastated. I mean, it's just gone. And then a few of the people just looking at the wreckage at the end of it. It was obviously a very dramatic night.
Safety expert killed in helicopter crash. A safety expert from Winchester was among the four to have died in the Super Puma helicopter tragedy in the North Sea. And there is a small photograph of the gentleman. The helicopter suffered a catastrophic loss of power before plunging into the sea off Shetland, killing George Allison and three colleagues. Mr. Allison was a director and safety training specialist for engineering consultancy Range Fox, which he ran from his home in Francis Gardens, Abbots Barton. The 57-year-old had been working at the offshore Dunbar platform as a project safety supervisor for just over a year, according to reports. He was overseeing conversion work at the platform and at a drilling support vessel. Describing himself on his LinkedIn profile as a highly qualified, experienced and competent safety advisor, he had been working in an offshore environment globally for the past 27 years. He listed his interests as swimming, fishing, art, riding his bicycle, cooking and reading. According to the online business profile, he'd worked as a project safety supervisor for Total Oil in the North Sea since August 2012. He had more than 25 years' experience in drilling and construction, as well as marine salvage and rig repairs. A spokesman for Total said, "We are extremely sad about what's happened and our deepest sympathies go to Mr. Allison's family and everyone who has been affected by this incident." Mr. Allison had also previously worked in Nigeria for Noble Drilling, providing health and safety training and maintaining morale. The Hampshire Chronicle approached his family, but they were too upset to comment. Mr. Allison went to school in Cumbria before attending Gateshead College and BCS College in Nottingham. Former colleagues appreciated his talent, according to comments made on his LinkedIn profile prior to his death. A senior health and safety advisor at Total said, "George is a very enthusiastic individual with good strengths in all areas. George is an excellent team member and works well under pressure." The other three victims have been named as Duncan Munro, age 46, from Bishop Auckland, Sarah Darnley, age 45, from Elgin, and Gary McCrossan, age 59, from Inverness.
District is facing housing shortage. Winchester faces a massive shortfall in housing, with thousands more homes needed to satisfy demand, according to a report. Planning consultants, Turley Associates, claimed the Winchester district will need 1,227 homes from 2013 to 2017 and has the biggest shortfall in Hampshire. But City Council planners have disputed the figures, saying its planning blueprint will meet the needs of the district in the coming years. Across Hampshire as a whole, 12,486 homes in total are needed over the next 4 years, according to Turley Associates. Winchester housing experts said house prices and the cost of living is a real problem for local families. Fiona Rescall, Advice Services Manager for Winchester District Citizens Advice Bureau, said, "Finding affordable housing in Winchester is always difficult. People are very restricted by the costs of living here. Private sector housing for rent is expensive, but social housing is limited, and there will always be more demand than supply." Under the Winchester District Local Plan, 12,500 new homes can be built by 2031, including major greenfield developments at Barton Farm, west of Waterlooville, and in North Whiteley. City Council Cabinet Member for Housing, Councillor Tony Coates, said, "The plan we have got until 2031 meets the needs of this district, and there is no need to provide additional homes. I think the situation is that the economy is improving, house building is increasing, and we will see over the next 5 to 10 years that there will be a catch-up in the Winchester district that will deliver housing." Steve Opasek, Head of Strategic Planning for the City Council, added, "They've, Turley, basically taken the countrywide requirement and they've backdated it. We would take issue with the way they've calculated that. We have got more than adequate land to comply with demand, and that will improve as the three large developments at Barton Farm, west of Waterlooville, and North Whiteley come on stream." The report is part of a southeast-wide study on housing needs, which estimates 208,000 new homes are needed in the region between 2013 and 2017, with a shortfall of 44,394 homes. Second only to West Sussex, Hampshire tops the list of the region's 8 counties lagging behind in house building. The report has been compiled from information provided by councils across the region using their 5-year demand and targets for housing from 2013 to 2017. Turley Associates were planning consultants promoting Pitt Manor, the controversial 200-home development that was granted outline planning permission last year.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, and then letters to the editor. So firstly, the death announcements for the week ending the 30th of August. Bray, Reginald William Bray, died peacefully in hospital, aged 88. Chamberlain, Paul Chamberlain, died unexpectedly at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 16th of August after a short illness caused by cancer. Fremantle, Mary Fremantle, died on the 23rd of August at HC1 Care Home, aged 90. Ledo Lopez, Jose Antonio Ledo Lopez, known as Joe, formerly of Winchester, who died suddenly in Santiago de Compostela. Locke, René Marie Locke, died peacefully at home on the 22nd of August, aged 100. Paddington, Brenda Joan Paddington, died on the 19th of August, aged 70. Spillane, Pamela Spillane, died suddenly in Aviemore on the 21st of August, aged 75. Swaffield, Edna May Swaffield, died peacefully at Abbots Barton Nursing Home, aged 84. Townend, Robert Joseph Townend, died suddenly in Australia, aged 27. And White, Eileen White, died peacefully on the 21st of August, aged 89. And now, Albie, can we have a Christian comment, please?
And this Christian comment is from Terry E. Hemming, under the heading, How Art Has Added to the Beauty of Our Holy Places. Last week, it was my privilege to be in Winchester Cathedral for the funeral of Canon Keith Walker. He was the man responsible for starting this column and wrote and supervised it until his retirement from his post as canon librarian. This was part of his concern for Christian education, and he was responsible not only for giving brilliant lectures himself, but for inviting distinguished people to speak to local audiences. He made many contributions to the Christian life of country, county and city. But the one that I think will be most enduring will be his championing of modern art being put into churches. If you visit Winchester Cathedral, you will find works by Anthony Gormley, Cecil Collins, Alice Kettle, Peter Ball and Elizabeth Frink, amongst others, which were introduced by Canon Walker. He did this because he had a profound sense that there was such a thing as sacred space, and that people coming to the cathedral could experience something more than the profane. In 1996, he wrote a book entitled Idols or Images. In it, he made his arguments for the church to be fully involved in commissioning new works of art. Since then, there has been a large response to his call. But when he began, it was unfashionable. Why was that? Well, part of our Reformation heritage has been to give precedence to the word over image. The sadly beautiful west window of Winchester Cathedral is not abstract because it was modern before its time, but because the parliamentarians had destroyed it as sacrilegious, and when it was restored, the pieces could not be put back together as they were. They were convinced visual art encouraged superstition, and it was the spoken word which explained everything in a way that all could understand. That emphasis has continued in our culture into the now secular 21st century. Canon Walker, although a very literate man whose PhD was on a Christian book, saw that there was more than can be described by words. He maintained that no verbal description can do justice to authentic sacred art, and believed people needed the freedom to approach that art without any dogmatic control. Many coming into the cathedral have experienced that. So we give thanks for his life and for the legacy he has left in the churches here and elsewhere. We also seek to follow by having his boldness to add our contribution to the beauty of holiness by placing new art in our holy places and leaving our mark for the generations to come. For that we shall need imagination and generosity, both important parts of the Christian life.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And this from R.F. Bickley. A duty to protect our historic city. Sir, I was surprised but pleased to note that a number of city councillors and others have decided, after so many years since the planning application was first submitted, to write to Carla Holmes concerning Andover Road rerouting through a proposed vast housing development. In the very early days of the proposal, I attended, I think, possibly the first public exhibition by Carla Holmes at the Guildhall. Visitors were invited to make their observations on a form, which I recall completing and sending by post to Carla Holmes. My main point was that the rerouting of Andover Road was totally illogical and not necessary. In fact, I consider such a rerouting of a main and once Roman road to be inappropriate and a danger to all those travelling on or crossing the road. The road will carry a huge amount of local and national traffic, much of which will be heavy vehicles and buses, thus inevitable delays and pollution. I feel city councillors, officers and all involved in the proposed development are under a duty to protect this historic city from a development that in its present form will ruin the Andover Road approach to the city. If this necessitates a new planning application, I consider it the duty of city councillors to insist this should be done. After all, I believe that they have the final say on the detailed planning application. R.F. Bickley of Winchester.
Jamie Robbins of Swift Close Badger Farm, Winchester, asks, were these people born miserable? Sir, once again, another group of Winchester's selfish minority, NIMBYs, chose to try and restrict the enjoyment and progress of the great quiet majority. This time, it was the Boomtown Festival, and I often wonder whether the people constantly complaining of this annual event were ever young once, or were they born miserable? Surely they could tolerate a little disruption to their lives during the festival and accept the benefits all these events at Matterley Bowl bring to Winchester. Peveril Bruce deserves to be congratulated for giving people both young and old the chance to attend the various events held there. The Boomtown NIMBYs are only yet another example of minority complaints to your newspaper and can be added to the following: Barton Farm, Bushfield Camp, The Market, Hugh Fernley Whittingstall's River Cottage Restaurant at Abbey Mill, Wind Turbines, Silver Hill, Aldie, Sainsbury's at Bishop's Waltham, the Council's New Homes Building Programme, and I'm sure there are many other examples your readers will be aware of. Being Winchester born and bred, I'm sure the Badger Farm estate and others, where I live, must have been subject to the professional NIMBYs when it was first proposed. So let's bring on the fracking and the wind farms and ignore those few who believe they represent the majority in Winchester. Jamie Robbins, Swift Close Badger Farm, Winchester.
Don't scale down Cloister's bookshop. Sir, I write in protest at the scaling down of the bookshop at the Winchester Cathedral Cloisters in the Inner Close. This used to take twice the amount of money it does now, since the act of vandalism that has reduced it to placing nearly all of its stock inside instead of also on display outside. I understand that the cathedral authorities are reviewing whether or not their bookshop can resume its original format. I do hope so. Richard Pott, Wales Street, Winchester.
And this from Tony Stevens. Don't sleepwalk into a lower limit. Sir, I read with much interest the excellent letters from Messrs Dobson and Edwards regarding the poll being conducted in Kingsworthy and Headbornworthy on the speed limit along Springvale Road, Kingsworthy. The first point I would make on this matter refers to Stanmore, where just 12% of those eligible to vote made a decision on the part of the remaining 88% to sleepwalk the area into a reduced speed limit in the Stanmore area, a far wider area than is appreciated, of 20 miles an hour. My second point is to therefore urge all residents of Kingsworthy who have yet to vote to submit their voting papers and say they need a greater reason for reducing the limit other than conjecture and innuendo, as Kingsworthy Parish Council has decided to ignore the facts of the matter and promote the what-if theory regarding road safety. Mr. Edwards' letter indicates an ongoing reduction in accidents and an already improving road safety situation. It is also clear the County Council does not support the Parish Council's position, or we would be discussing a TRO, not a parish straw poll. It is also quite clear that any reduction of the speed limit will lead to greater pressure to have high-density housing estates created off Spring Rail Road due to the reduced criteria for vision at road junctions. Residents of Kingsworthy, please take part in the poll or the parish will be sleepwalking its way back to the 1900s. Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
James Anderson of South Wanston is one of those who might be responding to the previous letter by saying wind farms are not the solution. Sir, read Martin Heath's letter. The Bullingdon site is in the bottom 5% of wind speed areas in the country, making the county inappropriate for wind farms. Mr. Heath goes on to say that wind farms will only be agreed if the development is appropriate. That too is misleading. The National Planning Policy Framework requires that any low carbon proposal should be passed unless there are very strong reasons not to, regardless of the economics. Hence the blight being brought down upon us. Mr. Heath's group continues its misleading statements on its website. It says, wind is cheaper than nuclear, a claim rebuffed by both DECC figures and the overarching national policy statement, in which nuclear is cheaper by some margin. The group also says wind farms receive no taxpayers' subsidy, the only support coming from the electricity industry itself through renewable energy certificates. This also is not correct, as these are an additional charge as part of every electricity bill. We need to meet the low carbon objectives in the most economic way. Why choose a costlier solution and inflict landscape blight? Wind farms are not the solution, as Minister Owen Paterson is trying to point out. James Anderson, South Wanston.
Now a letter under the heading Cyclists Should Show Consideration. And the letter is preceded by a photograph of Hockley Viaduct, built over the water meadows south of Winchester, showing the viaduct, its red bricks, complementary to the green summer foliage around, and St. Catherine's Hill in the background. Sir, I wonder if anyone else has encountered the inconsiderate cyclists riding along the Hockley Viaduct path. As regular users will be aware, there are signs requesting consideration to others. After a walk around St. Catherine's Hill, I made my way along the path towards Garnier Road, with my three dogs obediently walking to heel behind me. Suddenly, a cyclist appeared alongside me, riding at speed and startling myself and the dogs. I called out to him to stop, so he slowed down and turned to me. I asked him if perhaps he could warn myself or others by either a bell or calling out that he was approaching, at which I received abuse. It is a shame that my enjoyable walk should have been ruined by a single person who has obviously taken no notice of the signage. Jane Neville, Loudon Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. I should just point out, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester. The postcode is SO238AL. And now we're going to step back in time, 200 years. Nikki.
August the 30th, 1813. No decision on the armistice. Paris papers have arrived to the 22nd, and our readers will naturally expect to hear some decisive intelligence relative to the armistice. They will be disappointed. Not one word is mentioned in them upon the subject, and we hear no more of a Congress than if such measure had never been in contemplation. There is intelligence from Dresden of the 14th, 4 days after the armistice was to expire. It merely informs us that Bonaparte's headquarters were still there and that he enjoyed the best health. But though these papers supply us with no decisive information, they furnish diverse indications that war will be renewed immediately. The Prussian preparations and the spirit that pervades Prussia give considerable uneasiness to Bonaparte, and draw from him occasional splenetic remarks against that power.
100 years ago, August 30th, 1913, abominations of the bird trade. No apology is needed for drawing attention once more to the abominations of the caged bird trade. The coming of the first day of August means the letting loose of the bird catcher. It means also the utter destruction of the peace of mind of every moderately sensitive individual who is in the habit of walking on the downs and through country fields and lanes. The number of finches and linnets taken each season must be enormous. It is probably not exaggerated estimate that places the death rate of freshly caught birds at considerably over 50%. The species that are not worth keeping are not, as a rule, liberated. Let anyone who is examining the spot where one of these heartless pliers of a heartless trade has been at work. Blood on the grass, headless bodies, severed wings and reddened feathers suggest doings that we turn away from with closed eyes and ears stopped. And a second, rather different account. The Southampton Fire Brigade on Saturday morning smartly stopped the development of a fire in Canal Walk, which threatened to involve a considerable area. The fire occurred on the drapery premises of Lena Angell. The source of the fire was a bundle of handkerchiefs, which hung near a gas bracket. When about 10:30, the shop boy lit the gas, the flame flared up and ignited the handkerchiefs, which in a moment were ablaze. Several neighbouring shopkeepers ran in and tried to extinguish the flames with buckets of water, but the strength of the fire was far beyond them.
And now, 50 years ago, August 31st, 1963, house break-ins on the increase. So persistent is the current housebreaking trend that it is becoming a serious problem to the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary, said Sergeant Kenneth Dyer of the county's Crime Prevention Department this week. He said 463 private houses in the county and island had been entered this year, 78 of them in July. The majority of these break-ins were committed by thieves who gained access by windows which had been left open or unfastened, or else smashed windows to reach in and release catches. Much of this could be prevented if each householder would spend a few shillings on a special window lock.
And from 25 years ago, August the 26th, 1988, Kingsgate closure causes protest. Residents at the eastern side of Winchester have launched a vehement protest against the closure of College Street and the Kingsgate Arch to counter apparent acceptance of the scheme. A hitherto lack of reaction has led many to understand there are few objections to the proposal. So to this end, the Residents' Associations of Highcliffe and St Giles Hill, together with several other interested parties, set Wednesday aside to canvass drivers passing through the Wharf Hill and College Street route. Many drivers were simply unaware that their shortcut was to be closed. And the second item. Winchester City Council confirmed this week that the Brooks site will be at its disposal for a further 5 weeks so that the final fieldwork phase can be completed. It was never absolutely certain that this period would be available, but Ladbrokes City and County Land, who are developing the site over the next 2 years, informed Winchester's chief executive, Mr. David Cowan, on Wednesday that they would not be moving onto the site until the end of September. The final phase will consist of a watching brief to record any possible remains which may not have been revealed during the excavations which took place during 1987 and 1988. Now, Nikki, you've got an interesting article about Bremer House in the New Forest.
I have, and I'd just like to ask, is it Doddington or Doddington?
Doddington, I think.
Good. Was cursed caused by owning monastic land? The story of a family's century of disaster. They call it the curse of the Doddingtons and blamed it on their ownership of land seized by the monasteries. For 100 years it plagued the squires of Bremer House near Fordingbridge, wreaking torment and tragedy at every turn. Bremer's first Doddington was William, who held one of the highest offices in the land as Chancellor of the Exchequer. In the 1570s he bought various areas of land around Bremer, some of it confiscated by Henry VIII when the monasteries were dissolved 40 years earlier. He also built Bremer House, completed in 1583. But life turned tragically sour for Queen Elizabeth's Chancellor, due to mainly a bitter and complex land dispute which rumbled on for years. He spent time, energy and a small fortune defending himself against charges which he regarded as outrageously unjust. Eventually he reached the point where he no longer had the will to fight any further. On April 11th, 1600, the day the dispute was due to come before the Star Chamber, Doddington drafted a note accusing his opponents of perjury and slander. In quotes, "Every day that I lived was to me 100 deaths, he wrote, and signed himself the unhappy William Doddington. Then he left his London home and, in the words of a contemporary account, went up to St Sepulchre's steeple, threw himself over the battlements and broke his neck. The tragedy caused a sensation in Elizabethan London. The next of the Doddington disasters occurred in the 1620s, when William's first grandson and namesake died not long before his wedding day. Then, in 1629, another grandson, Henry, murdered his mother. He was hanged at Gallows Hill on Bremer Down, or at Winchester, according to different accounts. 3 years later, tragedy struck again when the third brother, Herbert, died, leaving a fourth, John, as the heir. Their father, also named William, believed his family's misfortunes were caused by God's displeasure on his ancestors for owning so much monastic land. Bremer later passed to John's daughter Anne, wife of Lord Brooke, but the curse of the Doddingtons still had not played its last card, for of Anne's 8 children, the 6 boys all died in their childhood or teens. Bremer remained in the Brooke family until 1748, when it was bought by the royal physician Sir Edward Hulse, whose descendants still own it today. The link with the Doddingtons also lives on, for it's said that the ghost of Christian, wife of Bremer's builder, still haunts the Tudor bedrooms. They say the curse today is vested in Christian's portrait, which hangs in the Great Hall, and that anyone who moves it risks an untimely death.
Oh, and from there to the editorial comment and first person, Graham.
Thank you. And the editorial comment is in praise of our brave firefighters. Hampshire firefighters have been roundly praised for the way they handled a potentially devastating fire in Winchester last week. As the dramatic pictures on pages 1 and 4 in this week's paper show, the intensity of the blaze would have brought terror to those living nearby. Many were forced to flee their homes at 4:30 a.m. in the morning, hoping and praying that the blaze wouldn't spread to affect their homes too. It's yet another example of the professionalism and expertise of all our emergency services. The wall of fire engulfed a new housing development in Hatherley Road, full flood, which was just a few weeks away from being finished. That nobody was seriously hurt, and that apart from some smoke damage to some residents' homes were still standing hours later, is testimony to the sterling work of the 40 firefighters who battled to contain it. The fire crews were also praised by residents for helping to keep people calm. In these days of public sector cuts, it's clear that we can forever rely on the brave men and women in the fire, police and health services to continue to do their jobs, often in the most challenging circumstances.
Thank you. Now we move on. Albie's going to read first person.
Ronald Allison writes under the statement, "The dreams that still need to be realised." It must have been an exhilarating experience to have been in Washington, D.C. these past few days. There, in the American capital, thousands of people from all over the United States have been recalling the day, 50 years ago yesterday, when about 250,000 marched into the city. They were there, in that year of 1963, to support the civil rights movement, and, as it transpired, to hear one of the most memorable and significant speeches ever delivered. From the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, the leader of the movement, Martin Luther King, at first gave his audience much that they would have expected to hear. But then it suddenly became electrifying and inspirational. A new level was reached, and "I Have a Dream" hit hearts and headlines around the world. King used the phrase several times, but most memorably, surely, when he revealed his great expectation. "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the colour of their skin, but by the content of their character." So simple, so straightforward, so obvious? No. Not then, and certainly not universally accepted. But it was to prove so powerful that the dream did move appreciably towards reality. Listening to King in Washington in 1963 was the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy. He was to be assassinated later in that year, but before his death, he had paved the way for the civil rights legislation to be enacted under his successor, President Johnson. That Martin Luther King was himself assassinated in 1968 only makes what he said all the more poignant. Thinking about the events in Washington these 50 years later, I was about to describe them as a time of celebration. Surely that would be right, with, for an obvious example, President Barack Obama now well into his second term in the White House. But then the BBC drew my attention to a speech made last Saturday from one of my four little children. Standing as his father had done, Martin Luther King III told his audience, "This is not the time for nostalgic commemoration, nor is this the time for self-congratulatory celebration. The task is not done. The journey is not complete. We can and we must do more." So I withdraw from celebrating and acknowledge the many injustices still to be overcome worldwide, many of them terrible. I do also acknowledge the man, his vision, and his oratory.
Thank you. Now we move on to general news items. Nikki.
And this is about the Winnell Junction works to be delayed. Major works to reduce congestion on one of Winchester's busiest roads have been postponed. The Highways Agency was due to start changes in late August to Eastern Lane at the Winnell roundabout junction with the A34 and M3, a popular commuter route. But now the works have been put back to mid-late September, according to the agency. The scheme involves widening the road to create three lanes in Eastern Lane, as well as the eastern side of the roundabout and on the southern bridge. New traffic signals and stop lines will be also installed to calm traffic. The works will cost around £500,000 and are due to be completed by October.
A man has told how he gave chase after his camper van was stolen in front of him. Thieves took Andy Rivett's L-registration white Toyota Hiace Devon Sunrise camper van, which is pictured and looking in surprisingly good nick. They took it from Wilmot Close in Eastleigh. The van has a very loud exhaust, which the 42-year-old heard. He leapt from his bed in time to see it being driven away as he reached the door. He got in his car and followed, but lost the trail at the top of the road, and despite driving round later, he failed to find it. The night before the theft, Mr. Rivett had locked all the windows and doors of the vehicle and still has all the keys. It is not known how it was stolen. The camper van, which is 20 years old and worth around £4,000, is used for holidays and has a distinctive inside with a push-up canvas-type roof. Inside, there is red, white and blue cotton bunting and a patchwork quilt in yellow, blue and red. The interior door handles have a floral pattern. Mr. Rivett said they had planned to use the camper van at the weekend to stay over in Lymington with visiting family and his partner Kim Rogers, age 32, and daughter Florence, 2. Anyone with information should call Eastleigh Police on 101 or Crime Stoppers Anonymous on 0800 555 111.
Beer and band finale at Village Show. They are best known for the excellent firework displays they put on every year in the city. But Winchester Round Table is planning another party next month at the Littleton and Hairstock Show. It takes place on Saturday, September 7th, at Littleton Recreation Ground, and Round Table members are organising the evening entertainment for the second year in a row. The group of fundraising Winchester businessmen has arranged a Bengal beer and band night, featuring food from Winchester's Bengal Sage restaurant, which specialises in creative curries. The event, which starts at 7 p.m, also features live music from the 60 Feet Chickens and a licensed bar sponsored by Bowman Ales. Roundtable member and event organiser Alistair Boothroyd said, "It's going to be a great evening, and I think people are going to have a lot of fun. It's great value, and last year we had more than 200 people, many of whom danced well into the evening. Hopefully they will come again." Tickets cost £7.50 per person, with dinner included. Early booking is encouraged on 01962 850 788. That's 01962 850 788. And tickets are also available from Hairstock Garage in Priors Dean Road. Proceeds go to the Roundtable Community Services Fund, as well as partner charities of the show.
Steam train back on county's main lines. A restored locomotive is now running each week between London and Weymouth. It had been lying in a scrapyard for decades, but now Hampshire Rail enthusiasts have witnessed the historic journey of a locomotive back on the main railway network for the first time in nearly 50 years. The steam locomotive number 34046 Braunton attracted a crowd of railway lovers as it stopped off at Southampton Central Station on its debut journey from London to Weymouth. It also passed through Winchester and Eastleigh on its route, hauling the Dorset Coast Express and retracing the routes it used to do all those years ago. Built in 1946, the locomotive put in 700,000 miles of service on the Southern Region railways back in the 40s, 50s and 60s. A Bulleid Pacific design express passenger locomotive, Braunton is a member of the West Country class of locomotives, many of which were named in honour of towns along the Southern Railway. The locomotive was built in Brighton Works, but also has a connection with Eastleigh, where its air-smoothed casing was removed in a redesign at the town's railway works in 1959. Number 34046 Braunton worked on the Barnstable to Ilfracombe line passing through Braunton, also seeing service between London, Brighton, Salisbury, Exeter and Plymouth, and on Bournemouth to Brighton services. But it was withdrawn from service in 1965, then lay in a scrapyard rotting for years. Owned by Locomotive 34046 Limited, it was restored by West Somerset Restoration. Brian Southen, committee member of the Eastleigh Railway Preservation Society, said the locomotive was well known. He said there were many West Country class locomotives produced, but only a few were still running. "It's a good addition to the few that had left running," he added. "Old railway enthusiasts will still remember it because there was such a popular class of locomotive. The West Country class, and they were good workhorses. They were very versatile. It's a blast from the past," he added. The locomotive has been running on the West Somerset Railway, but has now got the necessary certification for mainline operation. It is working for the summer as one of the pair of historic steam locomotives on the Dorset Coast Express Seaside Steam Service from London Victoria through to Weymouth, run by Heritage Rail Operator, the Railway Touring Company. The other is number 34067, Tangmere, a Battle of Britain-class Pacific built in 1947. They also work the Southern Railway. The train will run each Wednesday until September the 11th. This is a classic pairing which will delight alike both steam rail enthusiasts and passengers looking for a special seaside day out, said Nigel Dobbing, Managing Director of the Railway Touring Company. And for tickets, call 01553 661 500. That's 01553 661 500. And there are a couple of photographs, one of a really, truly magnificent locomotive, green and shiny and looking not unlike Thomas, but much smarter. And a lovely picture of two ladies looking out through their curtained window with their table and the lamp on the table, beaming out the window. The only slight anachronistic thing is a bottle of bottled water. Doesn't quite go with the image. I think that sounds really fun.
Now for something completely different. A Stockbridge osteopath is returning to Kenya next month on a humanitarian expedition. Emma Whiteman is working with the Divinity Foundation to provide medical care for orphaned and abandoned children. She leaves on September the 22nd and will spend her first week in the slums of Kibera, one of the most deprived areas of Nairobi, before travelling to Amboseli in southern Kenya to set up clinics to treat travelling tribes. The trip is completely self-funded, but she's still looking for donations of equipment such as toweling, nappies, art supplies, books and toothpaste. The charity also needs medical equipment and any financial support is welcomed. She's been raising funds over the past year and completed a sponsored one-mile swimming race at Eton Dorney Lake last September. Emma said, "Your support really does make a difference, especially when I can put your donations right into the hands that need them most." Anyone able to make a donation should contact her practice via Stockbridge Osteopathic Practice, all one word, at googlemail.com or by post to Stockbridge Osteopathic Practice, three separate words, High Street, Stockbridge, SO20 6HF. And there is a picture of Emma, presumably from a previous expedition, treating a small child sitting on his mother's lap while Emma, not clear what she's doing, I think she's using a stethoscope and perhaps taking his blood pressure. Anyway, very nice picture.
Drivers rally to the standard in historic outing. Motorists turn back the clock when they cruise through the Hampshire countryside for a vintage car rally. Crowds line the roads to watch a convoy of more than 80 vehicles taking part in the 54th Standard International Rally. The cars wound their way from Charlton All Saints near Salisbury via No Man's Land, the Wellows, Mottisfont, King Somborne and Stockbridge to Middle Wallop. The ride was the flagship event in the three-day rally at Bremer House, which attracted more than 1,000 people. Vehicles included a stunning maroon 1926 Shalcott, an impressive blue 1930 Teignmouth, and a sleek dark black 1938 Standard SS Jaguar, which won the best car category. The event was organised by Darrell Cunningham, who drove his 1939 Standard Flying 8 Tora. And there's a photograph of a beautiful Standard Flying 14, 1938. At the wheel is one of the vintage car enthusiasts and rally member, Kim Henson. And the sun is shining, the sunroof is open, and off EAF 694 is glinting in the polish of of the bonnet and the sides, the sunlight on that lovely sunny day.
Funding boost for elderly home care. Winchester's elderly population is set to benefit from a 1.8 million cash boost. The City Council and Sentinel Housing Association bid for the funding from the Department of Health scheme to stimulate extra care housing developments. Extra care provides people with an individual apartment, access to communal space and 24-hour on-site support. The grant has been backed by Hampshire County Council, which plans to close four of its traditional care homes over the coming months at Bulmer House in Petersfield, Cranley Paddock, Lyndhurst, Deeside in Basingstoke and Nightingale Lodge in Rumsey. Cornaway's care home in Kingsworthy was also closed by the council last year. A day centre remains in Kingsworthy, but its services are expected to move to a new development provided by this funding, with the City Council still to identify a site. Councillor Anna McNair-Scott said, "For many people, extra care is the ideal solution as they can have their own home, but with the added reassurance that help is at hand." Winchester is considered a key area for extra care, as there are around 10,800 over 75s living in the district, predicted to rise to 13,900 by 2020. Two existing sheltered housing schemes in Gordon Road have already been enhanced to extra care standards.
There's a photograph of a large flatbed lorry with a crane lifting a motorcycle wrapped in tarpaulin, which is at the scene of a fatal accident on the M27 earlier this month. It heads a report on a new drive to cut motorcycle crashes. Hampshire bikers are facing one of the most deadly years in the county's roads, following a sharp rise in fatal crashes. Police chiefs say that if cyclists continue to lose their lives at the same rate in coming months, the county could be facing its worst number of motorcycle fatalities in 5 years. Now, a campaign has been launched aimed at curbing the number of deaths and educating bikers about staying safe. Extra police will be on known accident routes and roads across the country that are popular with bikers attending meets on certain nights of the week and weekends. Details of the crackdown, called Operation Climate, follow the latest tragedy when a man in his 40s from Havant was killed in a rush hour collision on the M27 a fortnight ago. The man died at the scene after colliding with a waste truck that left the scene of the crash. The driver later called police following appeals through the media and was subsequently arrested on suspicion of causing death by careless driving, for which he is now on bail pending further inquiries. The crash saw a stretch of the westbound carriageway closed for 7 hours, causing traffic chaos through parts of Southampton, Hedge End, Fair Oak and Botley, as painstaking investigations were carried out covering a 200-metre stretch of road. Inspector Steve Wakeford, leading Operation Climate, said, "We have already gone back to 2010 as far as the figures are concerned, and if it continues at the same rate, it will take us back to the picture we had in 2008. When 25 people lost their lives in motorcycle accidents. We don't want that." Inspector Wakeford said, "The sudden rise in deaths on the road coincided with the arrival of good weather last month, bringing more leisure riders out on their motorbikes." He added, "We investigate and analyse each fatality, and there is no general cause that is the same behind each one. The fatalities we have seen have been a mixture of rider error and driver error, with speed an aspect in some cases."
Some dog owners have a real rough time teaching their pets to behave, but hairstock teenager Dan Parsons is putting the rest to shame after he and 18-week-old Jack Russell puppy Molly passed their Kennel Club Good Citizen Dog Training Scheme, GCDS, Puppy Foundation Assessment with flying colours. Dan, who has previously trained two Labrador retrievers, said, "We started going to the classes when Molly was 9 weeks old and haven't looked back since. We attended the classes with the aim to socialise her with other dogs and people and train her to ignore distractions. She learnt a variety of different things, including recall, sit and stay, and we hope to build on this at bronze level. My overall aim with Molly is to own a well-behaved and obedient pet." Caroline Kisco, Kennel Club Secretary, added, "Dan is a fantastic example of a responsible dog owner. It's great that he is so passionate about dogs at such a young age. We wish Dan and Molly all the best with their bronze award." And there are two photographs accompanying this article. One of Molly sitting on a chair, looking very pleased with herself, and wearing a large mauve rosette, which is for passing the assessment with flying colours. And the second photograph is of Dan kneeling and with Molly by his side, looking very obedient and sitting still, and both Dan and Molly looking very seriously at the cameraman.
Brothers join Dig to reveal hospital secrets. They are hoping to reveal centuries-old secrets hidden beneath the ground. Winchester Local Archaeology and Local History Service, WARG, kicked off its big dig last week at St Cross Hospital in Winchester. The excavation is to look for a lost building that may have become submerged over the centuries and could have been part of the original hospital founded by Henry de Blois, Bishop of Winchester, in 1132. WARG has dug previously at St Cross and discovered the building in 2009, but it was not possible to explore thoroughly because it is under a bowling green used for wedding receptions and other events. This year, as the hospital is carrying out repairs to the church, the trustees of St Cross have allowed WARG to return. The dig will continue until September the 8th, including a family open day this Sunday, September the 1st, for the public to get involved. The hospital is the oldest almshouse in the country, and the Brothers of St Cross joined WARG members to watch the first spade go in the ground. And there's a lovely photograph of the brothers with the master of the Hospital of St Cross, the Reverend Reg Sweet, and various members of the brother, cutting the first turf for WARG's archaeological excavation, a lot of them in their dark robes and Celtic crosses and sort of beret hats, and some of them in maroon with the beautiful St Cross church behind.
Two lovely, happy pictures of Elspeth French. One of them, she's running along towards the camera, accompanied by her very frisky dog, Tatty. And the other one is of Elspeth brandishing an array of medals and awards and trophies, some in her, holding them in her arms outstretched, and others hanging round her neck. She was once fighting for her life, and now she's fighting fit and has the gold medals to prove it. 8 years ago, Elspeth French, who's now 10, was suffering from a rare liver tumour, but thanks to a successful transplant, the Sparsholt Primary School pupil, who lives in Littleton, is excelling on the sports field. Representing King's College Hospital transplant team, she won breaststroke, freestyle swimming and the 50-metre sprint at the British Transplant Games in Sheffield this month. "This was my third transplant games and I was thrilled to win gold in my swimming and athletics events," Elspeth said. She is now well established as a contender since competing in the games in 2010 and 2012. Dad John, chief executive of healthcare consultant business FHT, and mum Jackie, once Elspeth's carer, now a part-time healthcare assistant, have spoken of how proud they are of their daughter's achievements. Mr. French said, "For her to be able to compete so well after having had her liver transplant is incredible. The purpose of the Games is not only to enable transplant patients to compete, but for people to understand that having a transplant is a second chance, and to realise how important it is to be on the organ register. Organised on behalf of the charity Transplant Sport, the Westfield Health British Transplant Games are one of the UK's biggest annual multi-sport events. The charity, which is based in Winnall in Winchester, aims to demonstrate what can be achieved by those who have undergone a transplant.
Now an article headed Grant to Help Musicians. Young Hampshire musicians are set to benefit from a £50,000 grant. The National Foundation for Youth Music has awarded the funding to charity Alabare Christian Care and Support to help disadvantaged youngsters in the Test Valley. Alabare provides housing, personalised support and training to enable disadvantaged young people to make a successful transition to independence. Janet Herring, Alabare Director of Care and Support, said, "This project enables us to give young people in the Test Valley the opportunity to really get involved in music, growing confidence and self-esteem."
And this is about the Eastern Fete. It is one of the biggest village fetes in Hampshire and one of the luckiest with the weather. The sun shone once again on the annual fete at Easton near Winchester when around 1,000 people turned out on Bank Holiday Monday. It has been going for at least 50 years and was held at the village cricket ground, large enough to contain a variety of stalls, games, ferret racing, a dog show, classic car parade and a vintage helicopter. The fete is organised by a local committee, with Iris Lacey, Sally Stone and Sally Clark taking the lead at this year's event. Mrs. Stone said, "It's just fantastic to see so many people turn up. Thank goodness we always seem to have good weather. No matter what the weather is like the day before or even in the morning, every year we end up with it being lucky and it clears up. We usually raise around £6,000, which is divided between the village hall, the church, cricket club, and that is a great boost for each of them. The amount raised this year is still to be confirmed." And there are several photographs which I have to say make you happy to be English. We have wheelbarrow races with some extremely jolly young girls being shoved along by their friends. Great speed, roaring with laughter. There's one of Adam Murch and his daughter Arabella, who looks more like she's screaming in terror as he hurtles along, obviously determined to win. There's Phoebe Jackson and Josh Golledge, both 11, 13, going head-to-head in a pillow fight, sitting on a pole, bashing each other with purple pillows. The classic car cavalcade, beautiful old maintained cars, just a joy to see. And ferret racing, it seems to me that the parents are getting more joy out of that than the children, but obviously highly amusing. And we have Elliot Francis, who's 5, trying to push Hapney, which we used to call shove Hapney, but anyway, watched by his mum, Alex, sister Tia, 9, and MP, Steve Bryan. And then I think very gutsy, we have the Reverend Andrew Mickerfield in the stocks, having what looks like water-filled balloons hurled at him. Pretty brave. And underneath, Steve Bryan also having things thrown at him. And finally, a picture of the old antique tractors and a little boy sitting there, which must be every little boy's dream to sit on an old antique tractor.
The sale of police headquarters buildings is looming. The deadline is looming for buyers interested in snapping up two of the largest buildings owned by Hampshire Constabulary. Potential investors have just until early next month to make bids for Alpha Park in Chandler's Ford and Hampshire Constabulary's West Hill headquarters in Winchester. Commercial property giants Lambert Smith Hampton, LSH, have been hired to help sell the sites. They are just 2 of 30 Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner properties being sold off in a multi-million pound portfolio that includes police stations, operational properties and a number of residential buildings. As previously reported, Alpha Park has been empty for 5 years after being bought in 2008 for £9.6 million by the county's police authority. More than £1.8 million has been paid out by the force for round-the-clock security for the 166,112 square feet of premises, which was originally bought as a new police headquarters. Refurbishing it to make it fit for purpose would have cost a further £15 million. Details of the sell-off were revealed by Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes and the Chief Constable Andy Marsh early this year. Mr. Marsh said at the time that money saved in the estate's review, estimated at more than £40 million through the sale of buildings, would be ploughed back into frontline services. Police chiefs say capital raised from sales will be reinvested into new police headquarters, two new police investigation centres, and an extensive refurbishment programme of existing buildings. The 5.84-acre West Hill site, consisting of an eight-storey 1960s block and standalone buildings, has outline planning consent for demolition and the building of 294 homes. Graham Holland of LSH said, "West Hill represents a rare and significant opportunity for substantial development in a very sought-after area of Winchester, with a great transport network and local amenities. Alpha Park is a key strategic site, comprising a large headquarters, production and warehouse facility, which ticks a lot of boxes for businesses looking to relocate to or within Southampton. Buyers have until September the 5th to make an offer for Alpha Park, while the following day is the deadline for those wanting to express an interest in the West Hill site." And there is a picture of the bit of the West Hill site, Hampshire Police Headquarters in Romsey Road. And as was said, it has outline planning consent for demolition and the building of 294 homes. So if you want to nick a bargain, go to it.
Now, a sad story about illicit drugs and the death of a young Winchester man. Under the heading, "Overdose killed man found dead at Royal Hampshire County Hospital." A Winchester man found dead in the toilets of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital had taken an overdose, an inquest heard. J.O. Crisman, 20, had recently enrolled on an access course at Peter Simmons College when he died from a lethal combination of tramadol and heroin in October last year. An inquest last Wednesday in Winchester heard that Mr. Crisman was homeless after being banned from the city's hostels and shelters for antisocial behaviour. The court was told he had been sleeping on the city's streets when he was admitted to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on October the 23rd, amid concerns he may have pneumonia, and he had declined offers of transport to a hostel in Basingstoke that was prepared to accommodate him. A statement from a mental health nurse at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital said Mr. Crisman had a history of drug abuse dating back to his early teens. Staff at the hospital said Mr. Crisman became verbally aggressive after he was refused extra tramadol the night before his death and was escorted from the premises. But he later returned and was found dead in a toilet cubicle in the early hours of October 24th. Officers who attended the scene said there was obvious evidence of drug use. Under new regulations, Coroner for Central Hampshire, Graham Short, recorded a verdict of drug-related death. He said, "He seemed to be adept at taking advantage of the system, and although I do not doubt he was ill, he continued taking tramadol until well after he was well again. The deceased injected himself with heroin, and he had also taken tramadol, and those were the circumstances of his death." Addressing the court, his mother, Maria Goncalves, from Whitchurch, said, "J.O. died, but he had dreams. He wanted to do volunteer work. He could be very charming, but he had his dark side. We have to tackle drug dealers, and this is a call for doctors, nurses and counsellors, that we have to look after people.
And on a happier note, Starlight brings fun and laughter. Children staying at Naomi House Hospice in Sutton Scotney were treated to a special rendition of Sleeping Beauty. As part of an 8-week national tour, four actors from the Starlight Summer Panto of Starlight Children's Foundation performed a 2-hour production of the famous children's story. Katie Robinson, spokesman for Naomi House, said, "It is known that entertainment and play can significantly improve a poorly child's hospital experience, as it can help to distract them from their illness and treatment." Starlight is a fantastic charity, and each year we look forward to the arrival of the Starlight Summer Panto and the fun and laughter that it brings our young patients. Naomi House Children's Hospice provides care and support for children and young people with life-limiting and life-threatening illnesses in central southern England. Starlight Children's Foundation provides entertainment in hospitals and hospices across the country. And there's a lovely photograph of the Sleeping Beauty, the cast from the Starlight Children Foundation Summer Panto at the hospice, with a wonderful harlequin being held up by someone in an extremely fluffy, enormous pink wig, and obviously the Prince Charming beaming away in his white ruffled shirt, and Sleeping Beauty with her long white dress and her little diamond tiara.
Winchester City Festival Choir is holding an open evening next month. The choir is looking for new members, particularly bass and tenors, and we'll meet at Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall on Wednesday, September the 11th at 7:45 p.m. It is an adult choir of around 60 singers under the direction of Graham Kidd. All are welcome, and rehearsals will begin later in September with a concert taking place in February, including pieces by Mozart, Bruckner, Gabrielli and Pergolesi. WCFC also joins forces with other choirs each May for the Winchester and County Music Festival, performing major choral works at either Romsey Abbey or Winchester Cathedral. For more details, contact Club Secretary Annie Woodward. That might be Woodward. On 01962 713 236. Email wcfc_sec, secretary presumably, at hotmail.com, or visit wcfc.hampshire.org.uk.
Is Gemma the latest victim of poisoning? Experts probe mystery dog deaths in forest. It killed at least 12 dogs earlier this year and struck fear into the hearts of pet owners across the New Forest. Now a deadly toxin, thought to be lurking in the soil, may have claimed another victim, 4 months after the last confirmed case. A 3-year-old dog called Gemma has died of kidney failure, the same condition that killed the other animals. She was taken ill after being exercised at Linwood near Ringwood and displayed some of the same symptoms reported by the owners of other victims. Gemma was taken to her vet and treated for a suspected bite, but her condition failed to improve and she was transferred to specialist vets Anderson Moores, the Hursley-based practice that investigated the other dog deaths in the forest. However, staff were unable to save Gemma and she died just 48 hours after being taken ill. "It was hopeless. Her kidneys had completely failed," said Gemma's owner, Chris Jansen. He added, "It was such a shock. I just keep bursting into tears. We were walking around Broomley and Holly Hatch enclosures and had been going for about an hour when she lifted her paw to tell me something was wrong with it. My friend and I couldn't see anything, but she wouldn't walk, and I had to carry her back." But Anderson Moores cast doubt on whether Gemma was killed by the toxin and is urging pet owners in the forest not to panic. Practice director Davina Anderson said, "The symptoms were similar, but we cannot say this is the same illness that affected dogs earlier in the year. All the deaths have occurred in the same general area, a vast expanse of heathland between Fritham and the Ringwood Fordingbridge area. The last confirmed case was reported in April and involved a dog that had been exercised near Burley. A Jack Russell called Squibby is one of the only two pets known to have survived the toxin. She suffered a swollen paw after going for a run near Latchmore Brook and spent 9 days on a drip. No other animal species appears to have been affected by the poison, which has yet to be identified. A Forestry Commission spokesman revealed that more tests are due to be carried out in the forest next month. He said owners should take their dog to a vet if they notice a wound, lesion or blister on the animal's face, or if it becomes quiet, starts vomiting or stops eating. And there's a photograph of Gemma, who died 2 days after walking near Linwood in the New Forest.
And this about an extraordinary man, Paul Chamberlain. Theatre director and university teacher Paul Chamberlain, who has died aged 68 following the sudden onset of cancer, lived in Winchester for almost 30 years. Director of Performing Arts at King Alfred's College, he played a big part in its transition into the University of Winchester. He directed countless university theatre productions, including the annual open-air Shakespeare at Mottisfont Abbey and elsewhere. Perhaps the most memorable of these was A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Dell, Coldon Common, in the summer of 1995. He was a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts and an active member of the local community. For a number of years, he was a member of the board of directors of the Theatre Royal, as well as chairman of Winchester's annual festival of street theatre, Hat Fair, and until recently chairman of Community Action Hampshire. This followed a pioneering career as a theatre director in the northeast of England, the West Country and in Wales, during which numerous writers sought him out to premiere their work. The first of these was C.P. Taylor. It was he who persuaded Paul to leave his lecturing post at Newcastle Poly and to take up a full-time position as artistic director of live theatre in Newcastle. Among premieres of Taylor's work in this phenomenally productive period, Paul directed Bandits in 76, Some Enchanted Evening, 77, Peter Pan and Emily in 1977, Give Us a Kiss, 1978, and A Nightingale Sang, 1978. When he moved to Devon as artistic director of the Orchard Theatre, he persuaded Taylor to write a play based on the experience of real Dartmoor farming family. The play was to be a farmer's boy. C.P. Taylor's play, Good, ran in the West End throughout 1981 and was released as a feature film starring Viggo Mortensen in 2008. Before moving to Hampshire, he was associate director of Cluid, in Wales, 1983 to 1985, responsible for notable productions, amongst others, of Alan Bleasdale's Having a Ball, 1984, which Paul subsequently directed in Dutch for a touring production in Belgium and Holland, despite not speaking a word of the language, and The Country Wife, 1985. He directed Winchester's duo of performing artists Jonathan Kay and Stephen Soloway in Attic Theatre's Standing Start, prior to a national tour culminating in a month's residency at the Hong Kong Festival in 1986, and Tim Prentke's contemporary mystery play Do Come Again for the Edinburgh Festival Fringe in 1996. While working at the University in Winchester, Paul maintained active links with the professional theatre and, when he retired from teaching, returned to it to direct three productions of Mine, at the Haymarket Theatre, Basingstoke, Original Sin, Beauty and the Beast, and Arts and Parts, as well as numerous rehearsed readings. A celebration of Paul's life and work will be held at the Forge in Basingstoke at a date to be arranged in October. And this article was by Steve Hawes.
Business is booming for a Winchester pub just 2 months after it reopened. The Running Horse in Littleton has doubled its customer numbers since the relaunch in June, when the pub was taken over by Hampshire's Upham Ale Company. Boss Yuri De Jager said The guys running the company have a lot of experience and a good track record. They've given us a great investment here. We're very well equipped and everything is in place to do the job properly. Although food is still a key part of the business, Mr. Dieger said, more focus should go on promoting it as a traditional watering hole. We can't operate without enticing people through the door with a nice meal, but we hope to have something for everyone. I'm still feeling my way in, but there are plans for beer festivals and band nights. I'm trying to see what the locals want. We need to be good at what we do and build on it. Mr. Dieger said the pub was regularly serving meals to around 100 customers per day on weekends, twice what the previous managers recorded. He added the pub has enjoyed a strong reaction from locals. The regulars come in because they like to have a pint here and are happy with us. But people who may not have come here before because it was not what they wanted have come back, and there have been a lot of positives. The Running Horse is the latest pub to be taken over by Upham, which also runs the Thomas Lord in Westmeon and the Navigator at Lower Swanwick. It also provides accommodation with 9 ensuite rooms on offer, with weekend bookings sold out since it reopened. And there's a picture of the team. Doesn't name them all, but there are 6 of them looking very happy and satisfied with themselves, standing in front of the bar, behind which is clearly a well-stocked shelf of drinks.
Another pub story about the Crown Inn, Bishop's Waltham, under the heading Pub Evacuated After Fire Starts in Beer Cellar. Several people escaped serious harm after a fire at a Hampshire pub on Monday. The fire broke out in the basement of the Crown Inn in St George's Square, Bishop's Waltham, at around 11 a.m. 7 people were treated on the scene for smoke inhalation, while 1 was taken to Queen Alexandra Hospital in Cosham with non-life-threatening injuries. There was no visible damage to the outside of the pub, while the ground floor also appeared unaffected. Staff closed the pub at 5 p.m, citing the fire as the reason. Investigations into the cause of the blaze are still ongoing, although it is understood it started in a tumble dryer in the beer cellar and storage area. The manager declined to comment and said the situation was being handled by the brewery, Fuller's. Fuller's was unavailable for comment at the time the Hampshire Chronicle went to press. Witnesses said the commotion caused traffic chaos in the market town. Jeff Fagan of Omega Mechanical and Electrical, who was doing maintenance work in a nearby shop, said, "We come out to do work here quite often, and I've never seen the traffic as bad. It was gridlock, and cars could hardly move. The police must have closed the road between the 2 roundabouts for about an hour and a half. It was awful." A shop worker, who asked not to be named, added, "We saw the fire engines and ambulances coming down the road, but not much else. To be honest, we get a lot of fires around here, so we're used to seeing the engines, and it all seemed to go fine, and I don't think anyone was badly hurt." Crews from Bishop's Waltham, Wickham and Botley attended, using 2 breathing apparatus, 1 jet and a hose reel to tackle the flames. South Central Ambulance Service sent a hazardous area response team, 1 ambulance officer, 1 ambulance crew and a rapid response vehicle. And the scene of all this commotion, the Crown Inn, is pictured with a smaller photograph of a notice which is displayed in the window saying, "We are closed today due to a fire this morning. Sorry for any inconvenience."
Tributes paid to young dad Danny. Police appealed for information after fatal crash. A family has paid tribute to a young dad who died after his car crashed into a tree, which left his passenger fighting for her life. Danny Apicella, who was described by his family as a colourful character, leaves a beautiful young daughter. The 24-year-old died at the scene of the crash on the B2177 between Lower Upham and Colden Common. The 21-year-old woman passenger was fighting for her life in Southampton General Hospital after she was cut free from the wreckage with serious injuries. In a statement, Mr. Apicella's family spoke about their shock and devastation and paid tribute to their son, who lived in Fleming Place, Coldon Common. It said, "Our worlds have fallen apart. Danny leaves behind a beautiful daughter who will be our cherished ray of sunshine through these dark days ahead. Danny was a colourful character and known by many. He was taken from us too soon, far too soon. He will be missed by everyone who knew him. We would like to say a heartfelt thank you to all the professionals who arrived at the scene and also to all our friends and family for all their love and messages of support at this very difficult time. Our lives will not be the same without Danny. We will always love and miss him dearly." Detectives from Winchester CID are working together with the Force's Road Death Investigation Team to find out how and why his car came off the road and hit the tree. Appealing for witnesses, Detective Sergeant Greg Wilcox said, "We are aware of a red Ford Focus on an 08 plate, which was seen driving from Coldon Common area towards Bishop's Waltham, and believe it could have passed the incident at the time. We would like to speak to the occupants of the car as potential witnesses and ask them to please contact us. Hampshire Police would not reveal why CID officers are involved in the inquiry." The couple were travelling in an old-style red Mini, which left the road at about 10:20 p.m. near Upham. A Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service spokesman said the vehicle hit at least one tree before coming to rest in a ditch. The two were cut free by firefighters from Eastleigh and Winchester in an operation that took more than an hour and a half. Police closed the road from Stroudwood Lane to the Alma pub in Upham. Anyone with information is asked to contact Hampshire Constabulary on 101, quoting Operation Biscoe, or to call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Thank you, and that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks, of course, to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.